Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinker.com, bringing you a Floydcast number 36 for October 20, 2014. First off, lead off with a bit of a downer update. Talked about Misty Upham last week. An actress went missing October 6, and we noticed that she was in a 6-9 month, which is kind of a challenging month. It's indefinite. You sort of have to wait for the month to end before you can, you know, start into things again. And then she was in a 9-day, kind of the same story for the day, but then also with the 3 there, it can be disappointing. Something you were counting on, some expectation, doesn't materialize. So it's kind of a hard day of a hard month. And then she had Misty, 955 first name, and a 5-ish last name. The 5, you know, is the quality that considers suicide. Probably more than all the other numbers put together. It's just another option for the 5 quality. The 5 is, you know, sort of extreme. Doesn't have the stability of the 6. That's why I would never recommend having a 5 in the name anywhere. This person had 2 of them, and then a 1 destiny, that hard physical, something bad happens kind of destiny. And also, the 1 destiny can't accumulate money. So really, this person had a lot of strikes against them. They were dealt a bad set of names, and you get them in a bad set of cycles, and things look pretty dark. Well, I guess the body has been found of this person. Some people were looking for them, and they did find the body. So, seems like the worst has come about. But again, you know, the point is in life is to learn, right? That's what separates us from rocks and trees. Plants are ever optimistic. They'll just keep trying to grow. I think of weeds, dandelions. They pop up, and you cut them with the mower, and they pop up again. You cut them with the mower, and they just keep doing it. That's how plants work. They just have to keep trying. If it was an animal and it kept having a bad experience somewhere, it would be like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to go try somewhere else. And humans, you know, we can get to the cause. It gives us more options. We have the option of changing our name. That's a fantastic option. The greatest upgrade in terms of how cheap it is and yet how, you know, it's basically a paperwork cost versus, you know, how it can profoundly change every part of your life. I changed my name over 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and proceeded to change every part of my life. And I keep doing that. I keep remaking myself. And right now with the family, we all change ourselves. A year or two ago, maybe I guess 2 or 3 years now, we gave up dairy. Another little refinement. Another little bit of progress. We used to buy bottled water, and then I was like, hey, wait a minute, there's this stream that just comes shooting right out of a rock here. Why don't we tap into that? So now our water is going to the next level. Everything can be upgraded. 10 years ago, I used to drink Maxwell House coffee. Which, yeah, it's like my name. I'm not related. It was fine to me at that time. And then I got exposed by someone to Pete's coffee. And it was, you know, kind of a mind-blowing experience. I never had coffee like it. You know, so we can change. And you know, suicide is permanent, right? That's the saddest part about it. All right, another story. Reading the news today, and this one just happened. Joanne Borgilla, dead at age 32 after 1 year battle with cancer. Well, age 32, 1 year battle with cancer, that was obviously a pretty serious cancer. It turns out it was a blastoma or whatever it is, like a brain cancer, which is, of course, a cell phone cancer. And these are rare cancers. The story says so as well. How do you get a rare cancer of the head? Cell phone radiation. That's how. Talk too much on the phone, get a cancer. Such a deal. Let's look at her name. She was an American Idol contestant, I guess. Let's look at her name. You know, American Idol music or performance expression, right? So Joanne, 325. The 3 is the most, probably the most expressive number when it comes to like music or, you know, singing, dancing kind of thing. Borgella for her last name, B-O-R-G-E-L-L-A, 369. Well, there's the 3 again with the 9 adding power to it. So in her name, she got 2 3s and the 9 adding power to a 3, which is like another 2 3s, you might say. So she's got basically almost nothing but 3s. But she got a bit of 5 around, 5 in the first name and then a 5 destiny. And the 5 destiny is that bitter experiences, accidents. And the five can be its own worst enemy. It can create a lot of tension. And tension's the killer. You could probably say this person died from tension. their body being involuntarily tense, which is to say out of balance, right? When you're in balance, you're relaxed. You can't tightrope walk and be tense. You have to be relaxed. When there's a little variation, your body has to respond evenly. When you're tense and there's a little variation, you overreact. Anyway, it was interesting how she had the kind of name that you would see on American Idol, that 369 last name, super expressive, maybe the most expressive of all the names. And then Five Destiny cuts her down at half of a life. Another name tragedy. Well, here's a non-name tragedy. I guess there was a cyclone hitting India, so like a massive storm hitting India, country of India. And then right nearby is Nepal, where all the high mountains are and where they do all the, you know, the climbing. And in this case, I guess there's a route around Annapurna for lesser climbers. It's basically a chance to get near the mountains and to see the mountains and to not be so much in danger and sort of have an extended trek where you go to sort of make a loop. There's these sort of tea houses, there's these places along the way that can sustain you, and so it's hiking amongst the great mountains of the world kind of thing. Well, I guess the cyclone, the sort of the effects of the cyclone, you know, they're big storms and they affect a wide area. And it dropped a huge amount of snow in Nepal, 1.8 meters of snow. We're talking close to 6 feet. In a space of 12 hours. Just for what it's worth, you know, 6 feet of snow isn't 6 feet of snow. Snow is one of these things that keeps compacting. So it might only be 3 feet when on the ground. Still, how do you walk through 3 feet of snow? Some of these people had to be rescued, or they were trying to rescue themselves from 5,000 meters. That's like 16,500 feet. So taller than almost any mountain in North America. Give you an idea. That's where these people were just like hiking along a trail. They weren't even at the top of a mountain because of, you know, that area, every mountain is just so tall. So kind of hard to rescue someone that high up in super treacherous conditions. So over 40 people, I think the latest count was 43 people are missing. They've recovered 39 bodies or something. It's a big one. And for me, like, you know, this isn't a name story. This is a, it goes with the territory. Story. There's an element of random chance when you fool around with mountains. You know, one little slip. So many of these great climbers, they probably died from one little slip, one foothold, one rope they couldn't find because it was, you know, a blizzard condition, and they could have followed that rope back down to camp. An oxygen bottle valve stuck. They can't open it. They can't get the oxygen. They don't have enough energy, and they give up. You know, just one little thing can end it. And so, you know, the question is, you know, with these first two stories, someone's very five-ish, they have sort of a bad luck name. You know, life's hard enough when you have a bad luck name. Do you really want to risk so much just for a mountain, just for a view? A view that you can get pretty well from a book, by the way. For me personally, I would rather read Reinhold Messner's books than go there. Simple as that. If money was no object, in other words, the cost of the trip was zero, I would rather read his books than go there. Maybe that seems weird. Some experiences are a little overrated. I think of the music concert experience. Music in a concert hall, in a stadium, is awful. Really awful. Number one. Number two, they always want to play some new songs that you don't like. Number three, they almost invariably change the old songs so they're not as good. There's no really any rhyme or reason to the songs. If they have five albums worth of hits, you're going to get songs spread across all five albums. And they want hundreds of dollars for that. And it's a one-time experience. You don't have the CD to throw into your player. Well, you could buy a CD, but then the experience costs even more money, right? I don't really get that. Okay, you can have a few live experiences, but then after that it's like, I got the general idea. Well, with mountains, right, you get the general idea, right? They go up. Things get harder the higher you go. There's snow and cold. You may lose your way. And it's true like that on every single mountain. This is the second big accident this year. This one is interesting that the world is in an 8-year, which normally should be fine conditions. 2 1-months should be fine. But there's an undertone coming in from the 9-year next year. And the undertone month is a 9 month. So the nine is the losses and tragedies, right? Well, that undertone is loud and clear in October. And so cyclically, nature will step in and go, hey, you shouldn't really be doing that. Or there is a consequence when you do that. You increase your chances of failure, basically. There's another kind of a small story. A guy gets arrested. I guess this guy is Nicholas Brendon. He used to be an actor for the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He was arrested on Friday for, quote, malicious injury to a property. There was a mugshot picture and he looked like he got hit in some way, so maybe there was like a fight. He was born April 12, 1971. So his birthday numbers are 439-47. The seven, you know, first of all, those are the kind of people that want to go into acting, very commonly. He's in the air group, 7 under 3, so the 3 is that inspiration, that expression we were just talking about. What cycle is he in 2014? He's in a 6 cycle, October 9, 6 months. Well, we were just talking about Misty being in a 6-9 month. Well, this is a very similar cycle. Sometimes every 3 years, two different people, two different birthday number combinations can go through relative cycles, cycles where the numbers are similar, and each month the cycle numbers will be similar. And so, in this case, someone in a 3 cycle and someone in a 6 cycle go through relative cycles. So one's in a 6-9, the other's in a 9-6. It's just the way the numbers work out. Well, the point is that in our case, we can say, same story again, right? Indefinite month, worrying month, worrying year. And this is a guy that, you know, used to be an actor kind of thing. He's 43 years of age, and I think this Buffy, you know, ended quite some time back, so they don't list anything else on IMDb, so, you know, here's a guy who doesn't really have a career right now, right? And regardless of whether you have money or not, if you don't have something to do, you can get into trouble. He was at Comic-Con, and I'm going to guess was drinking and, you know, got carried away. The story by itself, no big deal. No one died, no injury, no accident. But let's get to the cause of it. So, cycle's not really indicative. A little bit, you know, unsettling. A little bit more emotional is what it is. Well, let's look at his name. Nicholas, with an H, 729. Brendon, B-R-E-N-D-O-N, 279. Total, 999. Well, we've said last weekend, at other times, the most emotional numbers are 2, 7, and 9. That's all this guy has. 2, 7s, and 9s. The 9 adds power. So his first name, the 9 adds power to the 7, which would make him, you know, that good actor, right? Make him want to act, certainly. 7 and 9, really want to act. Strong desire to act. And then 279, last name. Super emotional. It's like the name Oliver, I think we were talking about. Or Jones. Add them together, 999. There's such a power in that 9. And it adds, you know, to whatever it's with. But the whole point is when you have a 999 total, 9 destiny, nature says you have to give. That's your plan for the rest of your life. Give to the maximum and give more. And you can't sustain that, no matter who you are. Even if you know the numbers, you can't sustain that. And so when you don't give, then nature takes. And you have a bad life, a bad experience. So there's absolutely no stability in his name. 7's in the first name, he's misunderstood. Then 2 quality prominent in the last name. He wants to be understood. He wants to understand others, but he doesn't have it. You know, this is, again, where the name torments you. That same person with different name combinations would be completely different. He could be an accountant. He could be a successful business owner. Only difference being the name. Nothing else. I'm going to get to the main story here after a sip of beets. I have come out with the latest version of CoSalt, my Consequences of a Spring and Loop Theory series of talks or papers. This one's the 8th one. Basically, I came out with the original theory 2 years ago and kept thinking about it. And then about a year later, I realized, hey, you know what? There's some repercussions of this theory in sort of like things I hadn't thought of. Once you got a better tool, once you got a laser, when they first invented the laser, they had no use for it. They did not know how to use it. It was just one of those things, we did it because we could. Of course, now lasers, there's probably 10 or 20 lasers for every person on Earth. We use them all over the place. Every computer pretty much that has a DVD or CD drive has a laser inside it. And there are just countless uses for lasers. Laser is that coherent light, that light of only one frequency, which, from a physics point of view, from a spring and loop theory point of view, is kind of interesting, by the way. Anyway, so with my lens, my theory, which allows me to see things much more clearly and simply than other theories, the first thing I realized was it affected the speed of light, and that the speed of light was slowing down, and is slowing down, very gradually, almost immeasurably. You have to measure to an accurate of one part per 10 million to notice a change in 100 years. So this may not be the part of my theory that suddenly someone takes a measurement and goes, hey, you're right. That's going to take 1,000 years, even then, and some improved measuring techniques. But one of the cool things with science on the plus side is they're always coming up with ways to measure things at an even greater resolution, even greater accuracy. I remember used to be poisons and whatnot were measured in parts per million. When we became aware of dioxins, these superfunds, these toxic sites, and they started talking about dioxins. Dioxins were being measured in parts per billion, and that was new at the time. This is 30 or 40 years ago. And now, of course, they measure in parts per trillion. Well, each of those jumps is a jump by a factor of 1,000. Parts per trillion is 1,000 times more accurate measurement. So the current state of the art is 1,000,000 times more precise measurement of toxins than 30 years ago. That's really amazing. Really amazing. I mean, imagine if you could lift 50 pounds today, and then in 40 years' time, you could lift 50 million pounds. So, fortunately, there is some progress in physics. But in terms of base theories, there's almost no progress. For the last 30, 40 years, everything is stalemated. And so if you look at the physics stories, and I do this, I get feeds that send me the story headlines, and it's the same stuff all the time. We found a new galaxy that's the furthest one yet, and they're all the same distance, 13.5 billion years, light years away. It's all the same answer. It's kind of like saying, I found another marble. Oh, look, there's another marble. This is the coolest marble yet. They're just marbles, guys. They're just marbles. And the thing is, when they're that far away, you get almost no information about them. When they first took a picture of Pluto, it was 4 pixels. The picture was 4 pixels. The screen that you're looking at is a minimum of 2,000,000 pixels. Imagine, it was about as many as are in a period. And that was their information about Pluto. That was what Pluto looked like. 4 specks on your screen. Some things, you're not going to learn about them by looking at 4 pixels. You have to come up with a different way to look at them. Another thing they do is they want to smash particles, and then they want to study the results. Well, the problem is we've got to the level where the only way we can progress is to go down to a smaller level. But it's exactly at that smaller level that we cannot measure it. Our measuring tools are light and things like that. Well, the frequency of light limits what light can measure. It's very precise. Like, you can measure like half, I think theoretically, half of the smallest wavelength. It's like if you have a ruler, and your ruler measures in, let's say, centimeters and millimeters, you can measure down to half a millimeter. You can't measure any smaller than that with a regular ruler. That's your limit. Well, to see the really small stuff, we have to go down another factor of 1,000,000,000,000,000. We're 1 billion times 1 billion factors away from seeing the truly smallest stuff. We are only going to be able to model that stuff. That's it. We're going to have models that start at the bottom, and they build everything up. And they either build our world, or they build something that doesn't make sense. And when they build something that doesn't make sense, we have to throw it out. So they call that the quantum world. You probably hear quantum a lot. Oh, and nano. Nano is 10 to the minus 9, so nano is 1 billionth. A nanometer, that means you could fit 1 billion ticks, 1 billion nanometers in a meter. 7 meters worth of nanometers, you could fit every person on Earth next to each other, if each person was a nanometer in size. Anyway, so I realized when I came out with the atom, which was the 7th Kosalt talk, I realized that it's gravity keeping things together in the nucleus. That in itself is profound, if true. I think it's just simply reasonable. It's just a reasonable, logical consequence or next step for my theory. In this book I was reading over the summer called 101 Quantum Questions, the guy said that gravity is so small compared to the electromagnetic force that you can completely forget about it in the nucleus. Except that I think it is gravity only that does all the nuclear work. What is not realized is that gravity between two objects separated from each other has to go across the gap. The gap we used to call space, but it's really what I call springs. Think of it like you're in a room full of marbles. Every inch, every nook and cranny is full of marbles. And you want someone at one end of the room to affect someone at the other end of the room and draw them towards them. And the way you do that, with my theory, is gravity interacts with the springs, with the energy, with the marbles. It contracts spring space, so you create a slight hollowing out or a slight compression of the marbles in one part of the room. And all the other marbles shift slightly towards that little pocket that you created. And that's gravity. A tiny little shifting of the marbles. And there's so many marbles. And your effect is so slight that that's why gravity at a distance like that is a small force. But in the nucleus, that same bending, think of it like the room has 100 balls in it. And you take one of the balls and you squeeze it to 1/4 of its size. Well, all the balls right nearby, they all glom towards that gap, right? That's the most favorable place for them to be. They go downhill towards that gap. Well, downhill is gravity. You know, I accept that my theory is conceptually, well, it's new. I won't say it's hard to understand, but it's new. But what I've thoroughly enjoyed is that, because this is the ultimate challenge of my theory, is where with some theories, and this is what people have been doing for the last 50 years, they just try and extend what's already there. So they go, well, there was a Big Bang, and so the remnants of the Big Bang is the cosmic microwave background, so they keep measuring the background, and then they have to try and explain phenomena. Well, maybe we can explain this phenomenon with the cosmic microwave background, and maybe we can explain that with the CMB, and that's all they got to work with. Well, I say there wasn't a Big Bang in the first place, or if there was, it didn't go down and is not going down the way they say it did. There was no inflationary period. The regular theory of the Big Bang says, you know, boom, there's an explosion, only it's super uniform because space today is super uniform. And the way it's uniform is, when it exploded, think of it like you have an army of 1 billion people, and you press a button and this army explodes from a center. No one dies, but they all suddenly take off at high speed. And then through the inflationary hack, these people get perfectly evenly placed throughout the entire country. And then, once they're in the entire country, now they only move at walking speed. Well, can you think of anything that would cause that, that could do that? No, there's nothing that can do that. Still, time and again, day after day, week after week, month after month, story after story, everyone is trying to build on that. So anyway, the cool thing about my theory is you can truly build off it because it's simple. In the atom, my last talk, I said that my theory may not be right, but it is the simplest possible theory of everything. You can't come up with anything simpler. It only has springs and loops and says everything is made of them. You can have a spring-loop bond, which today physics thinks of as quarks. You can have springs bumping against springs, which is how we transmit force, the electromagnetic force, they call it. And then when something breaks apart, they call that the weak force. So the bomb that blew up in Japan was a weak force bomb. And I say the weak force is when that spring loop bond breaks. When you separate the biggest force of life, the strong force, those springs, they don't just sit down and watch a football game. They have 1 billion times more energy than we can imagine. And so they immediately want to combine with something else. And so they thrash around until they combine with something else. And that's what I say is the weak force. And then gravity isn't understood. The current theories of gravity, and boy, if ever the word theory was applicable, it's with current theories of gravity. They think the gravity particle, the Higgs particle field, is spread everywhere. And then things interact with that particle. Well, this is, of course, ludicrous. Space is mostly empty and we have a little bit of stuff. How did they flip that around so that to say that basically the stuff, the graviton, the Higgs particle, is everywhere, but we have to interact with it to see it. You know, they just got it all backwards. It's kind of embarrassing, really. It's tremendously complicated, even to just explain the Higgs field. I listened to two guys, two great physicists, spend an average of an hour and 5 minutes each trying to explain it. Phew, man. I explain mine with mass is like a clamp on a fishnet. The fishnet is the universal matrix of springs, the room full of marbles. And gravity is crushing one of the marbles or clamping part of the fishnet. And when you clamp part of the fishnet, you feel it everywhere in the net. I'm done. What did that take? 16 seconds versus 3,600 seconds. 225 times faster. So 225 times simpler. So the cool thing I realized when I wrote The Atom was that gravity is creating that attractive force, because when you scale the size of the balls in the room, then when you compress or change one of the balls, it affects the other balls more. And so the attractive force in the nucleus is just, it's gravity. And then when you think about it, the electron going around the atom is gravity. It's exactly like a planet going around the sun. Well, doesn't that make a whole lot more sense? You know, nature is simple, and it's just a whole bunch of it, and it just is scaled up. Once again, my theory has brought a tremendous level of simplification. But, you know, when something is too radical, how long does it take for people to embrace it? When it steals people's jobs. Oh, there's a lot of people making a lot of money, wasting a lot of money on things like the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. Oh, man. Cost $10 billion to make and $5 billion a year to operate. It's a dollar a person for everyone on Earth, every year, to smash particles together. And they think maybe they might have got something. And it doesn't change or advance any theories. And actually, they got a whole lot of nothing, too, when it came to supersymmetry that everyone's putting their hopes on. The standard model of physics depends on supersymmetry. It says there are supersymmetric particles, particles that are like related to another particle, basically. And the problem is they're not finding it. And now they've, with the LHC, they've gotten to the energy levels where they had to find it. They call this supersymmetry, they call it SUSY for short. And if you've heard any of my talks, you know that I'm not a fan of SUSY. Well, luckily, SUSY is pretty much dead, and I think SUSY depends on the Higgs, or Higgs depends on SUSY, one or the other. So really, the Higgs is dead. So they have no theory of gravity. So with my lens, with my theory, I went and reviewed this guy's book, 101 Quantum Questions. It's a great book. If you want to learn about quantum physics, this is an excellent book to read. It's new. The guy is just very thorough. He broke it down to 101 subject areas, questions, and then he talked about those areas. And then, of course, if you have what you think is a better theory, then you can go through and you can go, well, first of all, I have an explanation for that, and I think it makes more sense. Or, in this question, you don't have an explanation, and I do. And there's lots of that. Physics is so full of holes. You know, we're protesting real-world things that matter. Hong Kong protesters and various things. And, you know, I'm not taking anything away from those. They do matter. But we should be protesting physics today. It's truly embarrassing that people, grown-ups, would keep trying to make something work that doesn't work. I don't really get it. You know, it just shows that physics has a lack of imagination. Science has a lack of imagination. The word science is 134, it's like the name David. It's an extremely stubborn, unchanging, narrow-minded combination. And that's the name of this field that physics is very much a part of. I mean, really, science is physics and physics is science. They're that close together. Chemistry is a subset of physics, a small part of physics, a small part of science. Biology is an even smaller part of chemistry, which is a small part of physics. They've tried to bring math into physics, especially with things like string theory and that. And really, the math guys have had a lot of fun. And it's completely worthless. Nothing has been gained by it. String theory is sort of like you let some kid take apart a very complicated thing, like let's say a VCR or a DVD player. And they have all the parts on the floor, and they have a plan of action of how they're going to put them all back together again. And the plan of action is 1,000 pages long. And they're at page 5. And yet, string theory has attracted thousands of physicists. including some of the best in the world. Edward Witten is currently wasting his time on string theory. This is a brilliant guy. He doesn't publish, which is really interesting. He has like a pen name, something Carlson, I forget. And he reads prolifically, voraciously, and then he does book reviews and he publishes them on Amazon. So it's just some seeming nobody Carlson dude. But his book reviews are off the charts. Super good. But this guy doesn't publish. He doesn't write his own stuff. You can't go to the library and get a book by Edward Witten. Wow. Some people live a weird life, right? You know, when you look at his name, he's very five-ish. And I'm going to say this. I bet he's had a lot of people criticize him, and he's just fed up with it. So he's like, forget it, I'm not going to publish, and this is what I'm going to do. But this man, you know, such potential there. And I talked about string theory being perfectly designed to waste your time. And that's really where it's at. Looking for the biggest, farthest away galaxy? Perfect way to waste your time. Looking for Earth-like planets? Perfect way to waste your time. We cannot get to the nearest galaxy, to the nearest star that has a planet. Even if we could, 50, 100, or 1,000 years each way, let's say we pressed a button, we went there, and we came back. What would we bring back that would be so special? At the most, it would be some form of life. Let's say we bring it back. It's going to involve chemistry. Chemistry doesn't change from one part to another. So it involves atoms. Well, DNA, which is profound stuff, it just involves atoms. Certain compounds of atoms, one for each of the four DNA members or components. And they know they've already found, you know, DNA precursors in amongst the stars. So it either has DNA like ours or it's something similar. Do we really want to invest thousands of years to find that out? It is fascinating, you know. There's so much more money to be made by wasting time than there is by actually getting an answer. Because once you get an answer, well, you got to move on. I'm feeling a slight, I'm not quite there yet, but this latest Quantum World, I'm really pleased with it. There's so many subjects that I talk about that I've thought about for so many years and tens of years. And now to have, you know, better concepts of these things, or to realize that they're sort of nonsense. There's something called superposition. It says a particle can be in two states at the same time. And I don't think that's the case. It just shows the weakness of the theory. So it's nice, you know, you can just sort of close some doors and go, there's no point in going down that alley. That's not the right track. But, of course, that shuts off the flow of money, right? Right now they're talking about going back to the moon. Why? What do you gain? Answer, absolutely nothing. Other than people get employed. Big companies get money to make rockets kind of like the rockets they made last time. People who control us, they want things to be the same. They want really no change. Because they control everything. King is in his counting house, counting out his money. He doesn't want the serfs to change. They grew grain last year. He wants them to grow grain next year. That's it. No change. So despite the blizzard of stories, I mean, you can go to fizz.org and subscribe, but you know, every day there's 30 stories. They're almost a carbon copy. I wish I had some statistical way of taking the stories, automatically sorting each story, take a year's worth of stories, and then go, what are 90% of the stories? 90% of the stories are the same, and they're probably in 5, maybe 10 subject areas. That's like hundreds of stories in each area. There just isn't progress. It'd be like going, instead of, you know, going around the earth, exploring, you know, the earth in new ways, it'd be like going to the same spot over and over again. We're looking for the most distant island, the island that's farthest away from every other place on earth. This island is, you know, you have to go 200 miles away from this island to get to the nearest next island. Oh, we found another one. You have to go 250 miles to get to the nearest next island. Who cares? Who cares? It's all just a shell game. It's all just a, oh, something exciting, never mind. Tomorrow, something exciting. Oh, well. Half the stories, of course, the ones that are the most exciting, they are. And then the next few days or weeks, the story is, you know, rebuffed. The bicep 2 thing in Antarctica. Right off the bat, I said, I doubt it. Right into a Floyd cast. And sure enough, a week later, a very, you know, scholarly, distinguished person said, I doubt it. And then now, of course, it's been a few months. There's no question whatsoever. It was total garbage. our obligation as humans, conscious beings, potentially conscious beings, is to grow and learn. That's sort of one of the things that we do have to do, because it's either one or the other. You're either growing and progressing or you're retrogressing. You're going the wrong way. There isn't any sitting still in life. And so, even though life, you know, seemingly doesn't have a purpose, there is a purpose, and that is to gain a better understanding of your body, of how life works. And when you gain all that, what do you do with it? Do you try and squirrel it away in a vault? You can't. You can't do that. If you try and lock away what you got, your life will start to get terrible. The people who control us, who have all the money locked away, they have the worst lives possible. It's not possible to have a worse life because they know what they're doing deep down. And honestly, they're so controlled and obsessed by their... I mean, it's crazy. Wanting to control others, and when you have a trillion, you want 2 trillion? Well, just for one person to get that second trillion, that means 1 billion people lose 1,000. So you have to steal 1,000 from 1 billion people for you to get a trillion. That requires a really crazy person to do that. So they're not to be envied. Ignorance, and, you know, theirs is a form of ignorance or denial. You know, we all get told directly and indirectly what we should be doing. We shouldn't be possessing things, and we should be generous, and we should be understanding, and we should learn from our mistakes, and then we should teach others, and all these different qualities, right? These are all the positive qualities. So it's just, this world is kind of locked in. It's like the record, the needle is skipping. We have a very deep groove by now. There's no chance of that needle advancing to the next track. And so we just keep playing that same groove. Oh, we found a planet. Hey, it turns out you can do this with that. And as soon as you read these stories, there's nothing to them. Believe me, I read these stories looking for something that I can explain with my theory or that I can rebuff with my theory. And for 90% of these stories, there's nothing to even analyze. It's all just speculation. That's the amazing thing. They'll find some slightly anomalous measurement, and then they'll fire off a theory. I wonder if someone somewhere has a big spinning board, like a dark board with a needle on it, and they just spin the needle, and they got 20 random theories on that board, and then the needle stops, and they just fire off one of those random theories. There's just so little thought behind these theories. It's really just a chance for a couple of guys to, hey, I was thinking, and get their name in the paper. And these are nobodies. Quick, name 3 researchers that you know about. I think the only one I can think of is the DNA guys. Is it Crick's? Crick and somebody. And then the guys who discovered the CMB, the Bell researchers, which was, I think, Wilson and somebody. Penzias and Wilson. That's about it in the research field. You're just a cog in the machine. You are stuck with what's already there, and you try and advance the state of the art, but it's hard. This is one of the good things about this 101 quantum questions, this author, Kenneth Ford. He's putting thought into the field. He's not just a researcher in a lab. He's trying to look at the theories and go, do they stand up? Does this theory conflict with any other theories? And if it does, what is the conflict? Well, then you have to resolve it one way or the other, right? Either one is wrong or the other's wrong, or they're both wrong. Pretty quickly you can see which one is wrong, and so they throw it out. And you can narrow down. You can make some progress just by analysis. But even these guys, I started a small file of authors that I think are at least trying. They're not just flim-flammers. They're not just salesmen. These are guys that are, well, that someone like Einstein would nod his head and go, yes, I think you are onto something. Keep working. These guys are making an effort of it. It's a short list. There's nothing in sight that's similar to my theory, which is nice. I like that. The way I look at it is, it's like I found a new country, and I'm trying to stake it. I'm trying to discover its high and low points, and create some maps, and set up a few outposts, observation posts. The world is welcome to come to my country. And I think, really genuinely think, this is a 100-year project. I think it will take 100 years for science to embrace my theory. And you know, my theory is not complete. It's really just a It's kind of like with Newton, and he dropped the apple. And he said, oh, gravity. Gravity makes the apple go down. The apple is attracted to the Earth. The formula for the gravity force is F equals ma. Force equals mass times acceleration. So the force of gravity equals the mass of the apple times the gravitational acceleration on Earth. You could drop the same apple on the moon and it would accelerate at a different speed, a slower speed, because gravity is less on the moon. The apple is the same. Gravitational force on the moon is less. So it's a simple theory. Planets orbiting the sun. The formula there is F equals a constant times M1, M2 over R squared. Just an extension of the apple force, apple phenomenon, but it basically says that, well, let's use the apple on the Earth. It says that the M1 is the mass of the apple, M2 is the mass of the Earth, and their distance apart squared. The force is inversely related to their distance apart. As they get farther apart, the gravitational force drops off as the square of the distance. Okay, that's a little more complicated, but really it's still a simple equation, a simple concept. I think my theory is maybe slightly more complicated than that, just because it explains more. Like when relativity came out, there were only two forces. There was gravity, and there was the electromagnetic force. That's it. There was no strong, no weak force. So, in 100 years, we now have four forces. Some people even think there's a fifth, quintessence. I think there's no evidence of that. So it's a more complicated world. We have quarks and subatomic particles, a whole bunches of them. More has to be explained, but that's been the fun thing with my theory. I've had these files on the different parts of physics. One file for each basic part, like quarks. I got a file on quarks and one on neutrinos. And anytime I get stories or thoughts related to those subject areas, I save them. And then you ferment and you think about it. And this is the big thing, is that, like, I put a lot of Einstein quotes in my last two talks. When I was talking about Einstein's formula in the third talk, I don't know if I gave him much credit. And then in the, I think it was the fifth talk about gravity, I kind of ripped him a bit because he never understood how gravity works. Even Feynman, who tried for 30 years, didn't know how gravity worked. And then Einstein said, gravity is not responsible for two people falling in love. And I realized that it's exactly responsible. That is exactly the force that's going on. So, you know, it could seem at that point in time that I was sort of anti-Einstein. I'm not anti-Einstein at all. And I got a large book of sort of the anthology of Einsteinisms, the ultimate Einstein quotation book or something like that. And there were, you know, thousands of Einstein quotes in there and categorized many different ways. And the thing I realized is that Einstein did everything intuitively, and he thought about it before he wrote it down. He had to get a complete package before he wrote something down. And justifiably so, he was, you know, kind of scornful of those who tried to just sort of move and kind of lockstep. I'm trying to think of a way for it. I think it's like the inductive reasoning by induction. If this, then this. Physics today says, you know, if this, then this. If we find this and it looks like this, then that. But really we have to be intuitive, more intuitive in our reasoning. Einstein was intuitive, and that's how he came up with his theories. I've been intuitive or creative with my theory, and it was fueled by the simplest of things. I just wanted to figure out, how does gravity work? I couldn't imagine, it was unfathomable, how gravity could work across empty space. How do two things attract each other across empty space? And by the way, this plus attracts minus, I give that a big rip in my latest Cosalt talk, Quantum World. This plus attracts minus is just as ludicrous, every bit as ludicrous, as the gravity this object attracts this object across empty space. You need a mechanism underneath that's different from plus attracts minus. You need a mechanism. Because what we go around with a sticker and we put a plus on this and a minus on that, it just doesn't actually make sense when you really get down to it. So that's what I realized, was Einstein really, you know, he really was a great thinker. And another one of his big things was, he realized that you're not going to do good physics if you try and do physics full time. Physics progresses when you don't do it full time. When you have it as a hobby, something you enjoy thinking about when you're otherwise not doing anything with your mind. In other words, let's say you go for a walk. Lately I've been walking the dogs in the morning. Got to be walking them within an hour here. And when I'm walking with the dogs, it's nice. It's nice weather, and, you know, you can enjoy the moisture and the view and the lack of people or whatever, but not much is going on. So it's just a natural time to think about some part of your life, whatever it is, you know, something I want to work on today, or overcoming an obstacle in a program I'm writing or something, and or chewing on part of my theory and or part of someone else's theory. And can I describe the flaw in their theory? Can I explain their theory using my theory? Can I, you know, having a go at it? But then to be able to let it go again. 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, you're not thinking about it. You're on to the next thing. And you need that gestation time. The great things happen with the gestation time. Got a new author here, Amit Goswami. He's retired now. He's a physics, quantum physics guy, but he's a very philosophical, that Eastern mindset kind of guy. So he's trying to unite East and West. This is something that the gurus of the East told us had to be done. We had to unite the East and West. And it hasn't changed. That goal is still there. The West is like a lunatic who's racing along trying to steal everyone else's stuff and put it in his giant pockets. We have less and less purpose every day. There's more and more of a grab every day. There's more control every day. There's more and more desire to murder people with wireless radiation and fluoride every day. The West is so fantastically off track. It desperately needs the spiritual side of life. Well, this guy directly connects the quantum, the physics, the West side with the East side. I had a trouble last week where my recording, I lost everything. I did the entire floodcast, went to click save, and my recorder program just disappeared. That wasn't much fun. So just now while I was talking, I got an hourglass coming up again. I was like, oh no, am I going to lose everything? So I quickly saved most of the floodcast. So I got something. All right, so that's my quantum world. I'm kind of pleased with it. I've realized with this quantum world program that there's a lot of revolutionary stuff in there. For example, I say that light, what we call the photon, I say the photon doesn't exist. It is a useful model. We can say there are photons of light, and when you turn on a flashlight, you know, these energetic chunks of energy come flying off of the filament and shoot across empty space and hit your eyeball. It's an acceptable model, but they're not actually things. They are an effect, just like gravity. When you have a mug, the mug is a whole bunch of things. And they don't change. And you can come back, you can find, you know, mugs. Archaeologists find mugs that are thousands of years old. But that photon of light, I use the example when you ring a bell. If you hit a bell with a little hammer, and the bell starts vibrating, and then you hear the sound. The ring of the bell, does the ring exist? The ring is. It is an effect. But it doesn't exist. In other words, it's just a transfer of energy from one place to another. Maybe think of it like mailing a letter or sending a text. You have a text, you have a thought, and then you send it to someone else. And while it's buzzing down those wires, does it exist? It's just a propagated effect. Now it happens that with the texting system, when you receive it, let's say you send it on the same phone as you receive it on. So when you receive it, it looks basically the same as when it was sent. But that's a reassembly. You can reassemble photons. You know, there are some places where they slow photons down and trap them in. Like a laser. A laser works actually by partially trapping photons and using them to amplify. But you're not using the same photons. The photon is a pulse transferred. And if you want that pulse to come back, it's not the same pulse. Think of it like, let's say you have a group of people in a row, and you give one of them a message, and they go, hi, and the next one goes, hi, and they pass the word hi down, and then gets to one end, and then the guy turns around and he says the same word back, hi, hi, hi. Well, the hi doesn't exist. It's just a transferred pulse of energy. And you can keep transferring it, but it doesn't exist, if that makes sense. It doesn't exist like a particle exists. And the point is that when you know, these kind of little small conceptual differences, they lead to big changes in theories. You know, when you read this quantum book and you use my theory, you keep coming up with these realizations because they say something, you're like, wait a minute, that's not actually what's going on. But you need that better model, that better theory to see that. And that's how you make real, genuine progress. You come up with a better model. Anyway, so it's kind of fun. And also, there's a whole particle wave thing. This is a big part of quantum mechanics, quantum physics, is that they try and model things with waves. And they say, when you create a particle, it starts off as a particle, and then it has a wave-like behavior in the middle, and then when it hits the target like a particle. They're serious about this. Well, they get to that point because they can't explain the wave-like behavior in the middle. Well, I can. My theory can. It's very simple. Imagine you have that room full of marbles, and you have a guy at the door, and he hits the first marble in the room. He hits it with his marble. And then you have bip, 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 bip. That sound is transmitted across the room, right? Well, as it's transmitting, those marbles, as they get hit, they vibrate. And so marbles to the side of that path of sound, path of energy, marbles to the side get slightly lesser amounts of energy transmitted to the side. And that's the ripple. That's the wave. But the point is that you need an ether. In this case, the room full of marbles is the ether. You cannot get that wave-like phenomenon without the ether, which is the underlying springs. So you have a particle, and then you have the springs. Again, my theory just very simply explains it. No waves. There are no waves. That's Floyd's realization, one of them, from quantum world, is that it's profound. There are no waves. There are wave-like things, but they're not. It's like, in this world, I'm recording to you, and if you look at what I'm saying on a graphic, on an equalizer, you see all these squiggly lines, and you go, those are waves. Well, this is all recorded digitally, and that means it's sampled. It's sampled so many thousand, tens of thousands of times a second. So at each of 10,000 times in a second, it goes, how loud is it? How loud is it? How loud is it? How loud is it? It keeps doing that. But it's not a wave. Think of it like steps in a pyramid. Imagine you had 1,000 pyramids per second worth of steps. But they're not smooth. There's little steps in there. They're discrete. They're quantized. And what we think of as waves in this world is also quantized. It has steps in it. There are no waves. So as I say, it's, you know, one of the problems is when you have a new theory, people are skeptical or not interested or don't know about it. And then if you quickly extend it, then they're like, oh, well, wait a minute, now you're just talking crazy talk here. That's fine. It's my country, and I'm extending my country and putting my stakes down and building a little shack for myself, my wife. And the invitation is open if someone wants to come and check out Quantum World. They're welcome to. All right, I need to get to my of the weeks. Bad driver of the week. Traffic jam mystery solved by mathematicians. Researchers at the University of Exeter have found that just one person, even slightly stepping on their brakes, can have a devastating effect on the traffic around them. Well, I wonder how many of us are aware of this. I mean, for me, personally, I've been acutely aware of this for probably 30 or 40 years. I'm, you know, very reluctant to use the brake. I can have my foot literally raised and right above the brake. I'm ready to use it, but I try not to. Part of what, you know, changed things for me was the Arthur Haley book called Wheels. I think it was called Wheels. You know, it's one of these fictional books about Detroit Auto City. And it was kind of based on a guy. One of the guys in the book was a guy who was like an efficiency expert type guy. And he would study traffic. And I think the book even starts off with this guy sort of looking out the window and looking at the traffic and kind of modeling the traffic in his mind. And what that's led to today is that's why they have the red light, green light on the on-ramps. That's why they control the traffic getting onto a highway. What this Wheels guy realized was, if things get too crowded, the traffic stops. So you have to stop things from getting too crowded. It shouldn't happen in theory. If it was water, you don't get water stopping when it's too crowded. Because water doesn't freak out when someone hits the brakes. Humans freak out when someone hits the brakes. And that's what this story is talking about. I thought that was kind of interesting. I watched a number of oldie but goodie movies over the last week. Some end up being sort of better than you. Maybe you remember them, or just as good. Some end up being a little bit disappointing. Like I give a slight downgrade to WALL-E, the Disney movie WALL-E. It just didn't stand up as well on rewatching, especially when we leave Earth and we get into that spaceship and all the silly blobs in the spaceship kind of thing. It becomes like a conventional, you know, chase movie. The Hollywood formula of the chase and all that stuff sort of kicks in. But that little guy, Wally, on the planet Earth, without saying any words or almost any words, that first part of the movie is still very, you know, delightful and original and enjoyable. But anyway, slight downgrade. I rewatched In the Valley of Elah, E-L-A-H, Tommy Lee Jones. This is an exceptional movie. Tommy Lee Jones is an exceptional actor. By the way, you know, we were talking about that person earlier, the Brendan character, and how he had a set of names that made him super emotional and sort of unstable. Well, the funny thing is, Tommy Lee Jones has an identical name. Tommy Lee is the same as Nicholas with the H. Jones is the same as Brendan, B-R-E-N-D-O-N. One chance in 6,500 of that happening. So, Tommy Lee Jones, who, by the way, is professionally, classically trained. He's a, you know, a trained actor, truly. I think, I want to say Shakespearean. I don't think it's Shakespearean, but, you know, one of these famous acting schools, anyway. And that's what you need to be stable. You need professional training. You got to get that. It helps so much to have some, you know, some form of professional training, because it becomes your lens. It becomes your way of viewing the world. For me, my first one was being an engineer. That was my first way of viewing the world. And you need that. Then when I got the names and the numbers stuff, that became a better way of viewing the world. And then I went full circle. I went right back to the physics I grew up with, the physics I've listened to for 50 years, and came up with my theory, but it was putting it all together. And that intuitive pause, working on a puzzle and pausing, working on it, pausing. And then eventually the light bulb goes off. Well, In the Valley of Elah, Tommy Lee is just so exceptional. I've said about another one of his movies that no one is better than Tommy Lee Jones at doing nothing, at just responding, at just sitting there, at just getting ready for his next action. He's really exceptional. He's a delight. And I was reading online a different Tommy Lee movie that I had just rewatched, and they were saying, I don't think I've ever seen a bad Tommy Lee Jones movie. And, you know, when you have a truly great actor like that, that's what happens. Cool and uncool thing of the week. Uncool. 1984 update. Court: New York City can ban unvaccinated students. Federal judge has ruled in favor of New York City policy that allows schools to ban unvaccinated kids from attending classes when another child has come down with a vaccine-preventable illness. Well, it's all part of turning us into disposable people, right? When we are vaccinated, they even use the word herd. The public officials use the word herd to describe us, the 99%. They want the 99% vaccinated to protect the 1% of the herd. Really? This is actually codified. It's written down. It's policy. So now they're saying that the 99% basically have to be vaccinated in school, right? You know, each of these stories, they always start at one level and they go to the next level. So first of all, they ruled that the schools can ban unvaccinated kids. Well, then that's a short step away from the schools not allowing unvaccinated kids in the first place. Well, there's always some illness around, so you got to be vaccinated now. They still have vaccines with mercury in them, mercurethol or something. There are still vaccines with mercury in them. The one I'm aware of specifically is a flu vaccine. When you give a flu shot to many people, like on an individual dose level, you have a dose of the vaccine in a bottle and you put a needle into the bottle and you suck out some of the stuff and you stick it in your arm. When you're doing it for more than one person, the slightly cheaper way is to have a bottle that has 10 doses in it. And you put the needle in the bottle and you pull out one of the doses of the 10 doses. Well, in those cases, for sure, I think it's with the flu vaccine, they preserve the serum inside there with mercury. So they're squirting mercury into your body. This is a known toxin, just like fluoride, just like lead. Worse than lead, probably. And in some cases, it's created autistic people. There's court cases I know of, details of stories where people have been awarded settlements because vaccines caused them to become autistic. Autism is basically, you don't develop in a balanced way. That's it. And when you put poison in little children, little babies, the number of vaccines keeps growing. We're now up to the 100 level. If you do all the vaccines you're supposed to, you're looking at 100 vaccinations for one child. That's 100 chances to stick poison in you. 100 chances for a reaction to that poison. And that's why autism is off the charts. It's 10 or 100 times more than it used to be. Why? Gee. Surprise, surprise. Well, they don't care. They want 99% to be vaccinated so that they have less chance of getting it. Uncool. Cool thing of the week, there's a movie called Big Hero 6. This is the latest Disney movie. Story headline, Disney rendered its new animated film on a 55,000 core supercomputer. The supercomputer was spread across four geographic locations. Their render program, the rendering program that puts it all together, so sophisticated, so advanced, so powerful that the movie Tangled, which came out just a few years ago, this program could render the entirety of Tangled in 10 days. That's a leap forward. The area in the movie is called San Francisco. The actual area rendered has 83,000 buildings. This means that there's 83,000 building objects that have been created, modeled, stored in a program, and available to be displayed when they need to be displayed. 260,000 tree objects, 215,000 streetlights, 100,000 vehicles, thousands of people, crowd, extras. Animating a city that lively and massive would not have been possible with previous technology. They were using like a beta program, a new program. And then they say, in a typical scene in this movie, there are 20 million, they call them microbots, 20 million sub-programs on the screen in the average shot. You have to be a techie to appreciate it, but pretty amazing, pretty cool. All right, quote of the week. This will be from Faraday, TV show, David Faraday, phenomenal guy, Irish guy. You know, the Irish are so pleasant. That's what I learned. My exposure to Irish people, there is no more pleasant group of people on the face of the earth than Irish. I don't know why they are. They're just enjoyable to be around. They got the gift of the gab, sure, but they're just, it's soothing, it's almost musical to listen to them talking. They just have a relaxed, full of life attitude. So here's Faraday. He was interviewing Lou Holtz, and the quote that came out of it, which I think Faraday just sort of put it together, improvised it, was, love what you do, and you'll love doing it well. So I realize in my case, you know, I love thinking. My father and my older brother, they logged a lot of hours thinking at the kitchen table during a meal. Sure, we talked about all kinds of things, but when the physics came in, it was them too. And the rest of us were listening, or, yeah, basically listening. And that became like part of the underpinning of me, without me really realizing it. It just was natural. I loved math from an early age, but it was because, you know, my dad would use, he would do little back-of-the-envelope calculations. He would ask you a question, and then you were trying to estimate. And estimating is math. It hones your math skills. And math skills are one of these things, it's like, you know, playing tennis or golf or something. The more you practice it, the more honed it gets. You know, it just created a love for me of math, of science, especially chemistry. The love was probably, you know, equal parts math and chemistry, and then physics was like second tier. And the reason I just didn't like physics as much is it was just more complicated. And, you know, maybe less intuitive, or it seemed to have a less broad scope. And, you know, in a way it does, which is sort of ironic. Even though physics describes everything, it's less visible. Physics is like the materials for a house. I used that example in one of my talks. It might have been one of my last Floydcast, I forget. I was saying how, imagine if you have a house that, you know, you make it of glass, nails, wood, and concrete. And imagine if you don't understand what wood is. Well, that's how we are with gravity. It's one of the four forces. We don't understand how it works. So how can you build houses well without knowing what wood is? The point is, those materials are underlying materials. So once the house is made, you look around, you don't see wood. It's all painted surfaces. You might see a tiny bit, depending on the house. You sure don't see nails. You don't see concrete, that's for sure. It's painted over, it's down in the basement. And so what you see, you might say, is the chemistry. It's chemistry, just more visible. You know, when you drink coffee, you're drinking chemistry, right? You know you're drinking, you know, caffeine molecules and flavor oil molecules, and you can readily imagine what they look like. We can imagine gravity, you know, we drop something and it falls, and we go, oh yeah, that's gravity. But it's hard to go beyond that. Take the concept of superposition and particle can be in two states. We just don't run into that daily. So you have to love the subject to do it well. You have to keep thinking about it. That's really what that means. Love what you do and you'll love doing it. Love what you do and you'll love thinking about it. You'll love the pauses between the times that you think about it. And you'll love looking forward to thinking about it again. It just makes you want to think about something when you love it. Let's say you love a food. Let's say I love pizza and I'm thinking about pizza. And then after I've had my pizza and like I only get one a day. Well then, later on in the day I'm thinking, boy, I sure would love some pizza. Well, too bad you already had your pizza. Well, I'm looking forward to pizza tomorrow. That's what the love does, is it makes you look forward to it. And to think about it in the meantime. Why do I like it? And why do I like it better than, you know, something else? And so good old Faraday. Faraday loves life, loves people, loves his... I'm sure he feels he's been given a second chance because he was wayward. He was too much of a partier, too much of a drinker, and he gave that up. And he got his life back. When you give up being wayward in physics and you come up with a better theory, you just don't accept second best, you get your life back. You get your physics back. I get the enjoyment back that I had when I was a kid. Only now it's different because when I was a kid, it was like I was being taken on a tour of the physics world, which, by the way, parts of it were under construction. It didn't make sense. Now, instead of that world, I get my own quantum world where things do make sense. And I get to coin terms and stick names on buildings or rocks or whatever and say, this is going to be called a spring. This is going to be called whatever. The only problem is my world is so simple. It's like a featureless world. And that's, by the way, good things are like that. Good things are featureless because we are the ones who put in the features. Bad things, they force. They force you to get a vaccination. They force you to be at work at this time. And I was going to say be home at a certain time. With one of my companies I worked for, you had to leave the building within 5 minutes of your quitting time. That was like a requirement of the job. And there was a reason for it. The clients were at their worst during shift change. There was a lot of anxiety. Often incidents occurred then. And it's made worse by staff that don't know how to arrive on time or early. Almost none of them arrived early. And by staff not leaving promptly. This one person routinely would stay a half an hour, 45 minutes longer. One excuse or another. After all, I just realized, hey, I'm not going to talk to this person. I'm just going to report them every time. Just send a private email to the manager, just letting him know what happened. And eventually we got rid of that person. That person was the scariest driver I have ever ridden in the back seat of. Oh, man. This is someone they're being paid at that moment to drive. It's a short drive, 5 miles. They had two clients in the car, plus another staff and themselves. The truck, big Suburban that we were riding in, was a dog. A worn-out vehicle that a corrupt higher-up in the company had sold to the company after they had worn it out. Anyway, so what was the point? The road they were speeding on was 30 miles an hour. What was the point? They were tailgating a city bus. Tailgating a vehicle means you're so close that if they hit their brakes hard, you won't have time to stop. Well, if you're tailgating a car, you can see what the car can see, or you know, in some cases, if you're a truck, you're higher up, you can see better than the car. So you can anticipate and you can be putting on the brakes at the same time they are putting on the brakes. But when you're tailgating a bus, you can't see anything. And this bus, as it happened, made stops on that road. It was a two-lane road and they were in like the curb lane. This person was tailgating in the curb lane behind a bus, so the bus was going to stop. And as they put it in the drive at one point, the bus stopped and we all held on for dear life, and luckily we didn't die at that moment. And then they said, the bus stopped for some reason. This is the way some people are. Well, that's all part of the negative headspace when you're not being creative. This person, you know, felt trapped by their job. They weren't fulfilled by their job. They weren't fulfilled by that drive. So they were desperately trying to get that drive over with so they could get to something more fulfilling, which they were an hour or two away from shift change. And on shift change, they would spend an hour socializing with the incoming staff, doing something that they weren't supposed to do. That's what this person looked forward to. This person was the most unproductive person I've ever seen. They literally avoided work from the start of the shift to the end. They followed none of the instructions. They had no capability with the clients whatsoever. The car was the car of a hoarder. They had literally thousands of pieces of trash and garbage in their car. And they would park their car right out front of this group home for everybody to see. You'd get these clients that were diagnosed as extremely handicapped. And the clients would just look at that car and just call a spade a spade. This person was really in more trouble than the clients. And they were a staff. This is what happens when you don't pay care providers enough money. Because care providing is a necessary thing. And it's a good thing. And so good things in life don't get paid. Everyone making the big bucks these days is doing something bad. The more bad it is, the more money you make. Sorry, it's just fact of life. There's a slightly countering trend that as you get better, you can charge slightly more than the average. But believe me, when I say slightly, 10%, maybe 20 if you're lucky, that's about it. There's a minimum, and then there's 10 or 20% more, and that's it. Unless you're corrupt. And then you can find ways to make a lot more. So instead of taking that approach, take the love what you do approach. You'll love doing it well. You'll be creative, and you could very well come up with your own unique theory of life. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 36 for October 20th, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.